meeting of the Ag Finance and Policy Committee to order. This is a remote. We've got a 10-second warning for House public info. And then I'll call the March 7th meeting of the Ag Finance and Policy Committee to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with Rule 10.01. Roll call, Mr. Smith.
Chair Sundin.
Here.
Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, present.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle, present.
Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Hansen R.
Present.
Representative Hansen J.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert, present.
Representative Lewick.
Lewick, present.
Representative Miller.
Miller, present.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Representative Thompson. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. We have the minutes of the March 2nd meeting. Representative Burkle, do you have a motion?
Yeah, so moved, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. There's a motion to adopt the minutes of the previous meeting. Any questions or corrections on those minutes? Seeing none, hearing none, those all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Okay, that motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have a scheduling issue going in, and it appears as if we still do. So we have a missing testifier right at this point. So we can move on to, okay.
Mr. McDivitt, yep. With the Beginning Farmers Report.
Okay, Mr. McDivitt, please give us the department's Beginning Farmers Report.
All right, good afternoon, Chair Sundin members. My name is Matt McDivitt. I'm the Ag Finance Supervisor for the Department of Agriculture. So I will share my screen here. I kind of have this in two parts. One's just a short PowerPoint kind of breaking down what the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit Program is about as a kind of a reminder for those that maybe don't know or don't remember. So we'll do that. And then I'll kind of jump into the legislative report that was prepared that kind of gets a little bit more into the numbers over the first few years of the program. So
great. Thank you.
Okay. How's that look? Everybody see it?
Great.
Okay, wonderful. All right. Okay, so the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit. So this is a credit against taxes due that asset owners can receive when they rent or sell assets to beginning farmers. So the basic formula for this year is they can get 5% of the sale of an agricultural asset up to $32,000. They can get 10% of the gross rental amount up to 3 years in a row as long as the lease is that long, up to a maximum of $7,000 a year. Or they can go 15% of the cash equivalent of the gross rental income for up to 3 years, $10,000 per year. And that's more commonly known as kind of a sharecrop type agreement. So a definition of agricultural asset is land, livestock, facilities, buildings, or machinery. And the owner of an agricultural asset can be an individual, a trust, a pass-through entity. They, however, cannot be a C-corp or equipment dealer or livestock dealer. Generally speaking, the requirements for the beginning farmers that they're a resident of Minnesota that's an individual. They've farmed less than 10 years based on filed Schedule Fs. More specifically, when they're not on anyone else's taxes, we'll occasionally have a younger farmer that'll start filing Schedule Fs in their teens when they still live at home, but we don't count that if they can be claimed as a dependent on their parents' tax returns. The land being farmed must be in Minnesota. As of right now, they cannot be a direct family member. They must be aunt or uncle or further removed. Net worth, 862, that's actually going to bump up here in a couple of days, when we make our adjustment up to, 903,000 as it adjusts for inflation every year. and they must do the majority of the labor and management and agree to enroll in a farm financial management course. So in our first year, 2018, there was an infusion of $5 million. And then for the remainder of the program, which is 2019 and set to sunset in 2023, there's an additional $6 million each year. Any unused amounts do roll over to the following year. So for this calendar year, 2022, there is about $19 million available. So what the beginning farmer gets is they can get a tax credit to help offset any costs involved with their farm financial management program, which they can get 100% up to $1,500 a year. That can go for 3 years. Once that 3 years is up, they still have to take the courses. We can just no longer reimburse for it. It can also, and commonly is used with the beginning farmer scholarship that the Department of Ag also administers. So there's a lot of beginning farmers that get a pretty good deal on some education. Okay, that is it with that. So let's move on to the report. And I've just kind of gone right to the page, so there isn't any redundancy here regarding some of the numbers. So first part here, this talks about what, you know, we send over our list of tax credits to Department of Revenue, and these are ones that were actually claimed. You know, as you can see here, there's carryover amount. So 2018, for instance, for asset owners, we had 407 for just a little over 2 million. 2019, 540 for 2.4, and 2020, 2.4. 2021 is yet to be complete, as people haven't filed their taxes yet for 21. So we'd still be waiting on that. And these carryover amounts here, whether we're talking number of carryovers or the amount, that just has to do with people that haven't claimed their credits. So there's not a ton out there, but a little bit. Same goes for the beginning farmer. So this would be for the cost of their educational. So as you can see, that started at 325, bumped up to a little over 400 in 2019, and then just ticked slightly downward to 380 in 2020. The numbers for 2021, you know, while you know, we don't have them official yet, are fairly similar to, you know, the 2019-2020 range of things. So if you want to take a look here at the bottom, tax credits issued by category. So as you can see, the majority have to do with leases, and that's the same for every year. So that's generally speaking land leases. There are some other types of leases that are involved, but some equipment leases and the like. But, you know, 95% of that is land. We've kind of kept a pretty stable amount of purchase, as you can see, over the first 3 years, you know, somewhere right around 50-ish. Every year as far as purchases, and just a little over $1 million each year. Share crop also has been fairly consistent, somewhere, you know, in the mid to high 20s each year, and about 200,000. So generally speaking, the geography here, you know, it's just kind of broken down by northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest, etc. So this just has to do where the asset owner themselves live. So, you know, you'll see some Twin Cities Metro. There's not obviously not a ton of tax credits going around in the Twin Cities Metro, but that just might be where the asset owner lives, and they're, you know, renting out land elsewhere in Minnesota. So that's kind of broken down by year, 2018, 2019. That's all that revenue had available by geocoding is the first 2 years. They're still working on 2020, but I would imagine, as you can see, the first 2 years are pretty similar, so those should be fairly similar as well. And then the breakdown of the actual beginning farmer, obviously you see here not a whole lot of Twin Cities Metro going on quite with that, but that's kind of the breakdown of where the beginning farmers are located. The report kind of breaks down exactly what it means here, and, you know, what Northeast region means or Northwest region means. Kind of a list of approved farm financial management programs that we accept. We, you know, have some larger things like U of M and Southwest Minnesota Farm Business Management and the like. And then there's also a number of independent farm business management instructors that have sent in the required paperwork and qualify to provide that instruction to the beginning farmers. And then it just gets a little bit to the approval process, which we just basically require that they give us a resume and break down the types of education they provide, and then we approve them at the RFA administrative level. So that pretty much wraps up my report. So I will take questions.
Okay. To the committee, any questions for Mr. McDivitt? Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, when the what's the retiring farmer or whomever the landowner is would get into a program like this with a beginning farmer and gets the tax credit, how many years can he carry forward that credit? Or does it have to be used in the year in which it occurs?
Mr. McDivitt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe the carryover, I'm not a tax accountant, but I think it's 10 years. So okay. If the asset owner can't use any of it or all of it in a given year, they can push it out, I believe, up to 10 years.
Follow up, Representative Anderson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McDivitt, you also mentioned that the young farmer can get the help with the financing of being in the beginning or the farm business management program, and that funding ends after 3 years, but he has to stay in the program. So how many years would he have to be in FBM if he had taken advantage of this program?
Mr. McDivitt.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. That depends a little bit. It would depend on how much coursework they took. If they were taking a full load, say, for instance, from farm business management for the first 3 years, they could then apply for a waiver of the education. And then we would take a look at that. We'll also allow waivers for people that have 4-year degrees in agricultural learning. So if they graduate from the U of M, for instance, with a 4-year ag degree, they could request a waiver. If they have quite a bit of job-related experience, if they're, they do farm loans, for instance, for the last 6 years and have some coursework as well at college previous to that, then we could consider a waiver.
Okay.
Any further follow-up?
Yeah, just one final question, Mr. Chair. Mr. McDivitt, the program began with $5 million in 2018, carried through at $6 million per year through 2023. Is that a total of $35 million that'll be a total amount in the program when it ends the year 2023 rolls around?
Mr. McDivitt?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. So it's like 35 or $36 million, I think was the total.
Okay. So then, again, there are $19 million available, and there's been some talk of expanding the eligibility. In light of the fact that it isn't being used as fast as it could be, would you recommend expanding the eligibility for the program?
Mr. McDivitt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I don't know how much I want to get into how much I should be recommending. I don't know if Deputy Commissioner Vobel maybe would be interested in taking that question more directly.
Commissioner Vobel, can you help us out?
Yes, thank you so much. For the record, my name is Andrea Vobel. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, thank you so much for the question. Certainly, that's been a question that's been kind of rolling around. I know it was in the tax bill last year. We certainly are interested in ways to help utilize these funds as much as we can. We know that there's some, we're working on some conversations with the Department of Revenue with the dollars that are there, but we are certainly open to that conversation.
Okay. Representative Anderson?
No further questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any further questions to Mr. McDivitt? Okay, well, thank you so much for that report. Let's move back to my bill. Chair Vang, would you take the gavel?
I sure will.
Okay. I'm going to move that House File 3421 be laid over for possible inclusion in the supplemental finance bill. You know, we've been faced with kind of a double whammy here with the COVID and the CWD and a lot of concerns for wildlife here. And I'd like to thank the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa for recognizing some of the risks that are present here. And what we're looking for is a $250,000 investment into the effects of COVID on the whitetail served population as well. So to explain those concerns, we have Chairman Kevin DeBee from the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Welcome to the committee and the Gwich.
Chairman Kevin DeBee, please state your name for the committee and proceed.
Bonjour, Nagani Moos Indigenous Cause, Nagachawan, Nujaba, Migizi Dodem. We do Kawashan Nugun, Dashutu, and Rajichigan, Akinin Nagani Mandemane Duk, Akinin Nagani Manduk, Wabanung, Jawanung, and I'm going to be waiting. No. Hello, my name is Kevin DeBee. I'm the chairman from the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of House File 3421, a bill to study the impacts of COVID on deer in the state of Minnesota. One of the ongoing impacts on the global pandemic is the transmission of mutation of COVID-19, not only in humans, but animals as well, including white-tailed deer. Our surrounding states of Wisconsin and Iowa have engaged in studies of the spread of COVID in deer populations, and this bill would add our state to the list. The study in Iowa found that on April 2020 to January 2021, 80% of the deer sample tested positive. That's an enormous number. It should be alarming to everybody. Michigan found 67% positivity rate in the 113 samples it tested. That's also a staggering number, especially when the pool was so small. I appreciate Chair Sundin bringing this bill forward. An ounce of preservation is worth a pound of cure. This is an important study in understanding the impacts of COVID-19 on both deer populations and how mutation works. As an avid hunter, I want to make sure that our herds are healthy, and so are those of who hunt them. This also becomes a treaty right with the Fond du Lac Band, or a treaty concern, especially with COVID the way that it is right now. If we can find if there's a transferable disease or process that goes from animals to human beings, this is a very, very concern of ours, especially with the deer herd itself, but as the way the pandemic has been going with COVID. It's something that we really need to address and take a hard, good look at it, because if we think by the simple indoctrinations or immunizations that we have taken and pursue these principles for individuals to do that, now we have another larger concern, and that's the animal herd or the deer population in the state of Minnesota if they are infected. And transferring to humans would never be able to slow down the principles of COVID. So again, thank you for your time. Miigwech.
Next, I see Tim Spreck as another testifier. Mr. Spreck, please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Tim Spreck. I'm speaking today for the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. Madam Chair, we had some internal discussions about this bill, and our testimony today is going to be more about the practicality of how it could be implemented within the farm rather than the overarching importance of the issue. Madam Chair, currently, as far as we know, when deer have COVID-19, they're not symptomatic. Furthermore, COVID-19 is not proven to be transmissible between deer and humans. So as a backdrop for this discussion, we kind of wonder oftentimes if it might be a better way to go about this, or if there might be a better way to administer these funds. So for instance, other animal species like house cats, guinea pigs, pets, that can also carry COVID-19. We wonder if the given proximity to humans between these animals within the household might be a more realistic or logical way to spend this type of funding. And also further, I think that you would find that if you approach the deer farming industry, there would be very little interest in participating in this type of a study. I've had discussions with several of our members, and what I'm finding out is that deer are very skittish by nature, as we all know. That's why they are so hard to hunt in the wild. And having additional persons, vehicles on the farm increases the likelihood of injury and other problems. So, for instance, understand that when a farmer is out among his livestock, they get to know him and they recognize him or her. But if we're bringing additional people on to do studies, depending on how in-depth this would be, we would assume that it would include taking samples and doing additional work on the farm. It really causes a lot of unnecessary handling and poses a great danger for the livestock and the asset that these farmers own. It's not uncommon to see deer freaking out, running into fences, being injured. And I just think that the loss and potential liability that these individual farmers would suffer in terms of loss of their asset would preclude a majority of them from even being interested in this type of a study. So our position on this would be to oppose for the reasons that I've just outlined. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chairman Dupuy and Mr. Spreck, for your testimony. I don't see any more testifiers, and so I will open up the floor for questions from the committee, and I see Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chairman Dupuy. You know, there we have it, folks. An unwillingness to even look. An unwillingness to even do a study on COVID. So last week, I believe it was out of Michigan, there was research that showed that the deer population they found a variant of COVID that was had not been found before. So when you have the biology that can be used as the biology of a deer herd, captive deer herd, that can be used as a reservoir for mutation. Now again, COVID kills us. Us. It kills us. Now, I believe in Europe, when mink had COVID, they killed all the mink. This is like basic disease management. If high-path avian influenza comes, we will kill the chickens and the turkeys. We will kill them. But the deer farm industry refuses to even do a study. This is why we can't get anything done. If we wait for the industry, they will delay as a tactic, delay, deny, delay, deny. And this is a threat to us as human beings. Mr. Chair, the health department should look at the threat to us as people right now with the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Natural Resources and look at whether the captive white-tailed deer should be euthanized as a protection for us. If the industry is unwilling to do even a study, how pathetic.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Next I see is Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment from what I hear Representative Hansen saying, Chair Hansen saying, is that he's making a recommendation out of this study to depopulate all the deer in Minnesota. That's a big issue. So I hope that we're ready as a state to have that conversation that if there's COVID-19 in deer and we need to depopulate deer, that's a huge, not only the farming industry, but the hunting industry would be devastated by something like that. And so I guess I would agree, I believe I still have the floor. I did not say that,
Representative Miller.
Madam Chair, I heard from Chair Hansen that he said over in Europe, there was COVID-19 in mink, and so they depopulated all the mink. So I made the transference, and he said, again, that depopulating these herds, if that's safety on humans, that we need to depopulate the herds. And I will say that I know that he made the distinction between the farmed herds and the wild herds, but I go back, the big thing in the last couple of years that I've had a problem with this with is that we seem to be able to focus on the farm that we can contain, or the herds that we can contain or in a fence, but we seem to ignore the wild deer at the same time. So anything that applies to the farmed deer, at least that I've heard so far, should be applying to the wild. So while Representative Hansen did not say we should depopulate the rest of the state of Minnesota, it would just flat out stand to reason that if COVID-19 is a danger through deer and we find that out, if he wants to depopulate deer in the farm deer, you certainly need to depopulate the wild as well.
Since this is in response to Chair Hansen, Chair Hansen, I'll give you the floor to respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was referring to depopulating the farm deer, just like the farmed mink were depopulated, because those are businesses under a control for private profit. And there is proximity between the captive deer, just like there was proximity between the captive mink, just like there's proximity with captive chickens or turkeys to people. And the risk of jumping to humans with this disease. There is, if I as a hunter shoot the deer, it's dead. It's not exhaling on me. If I'm cleaning it, that's different than if you are tending the deer in a barn or in a pen or feeding it or coming in contact with it. How did the deer get COVID? You don't have hunters hugging live wild deer. But you do have people in close proximity with deer when they are captive. That's the difference, and that's the risk. And that's the risk of getting a mutated COVID back into people. When you have large populations under containment, and if the disease is allowed to mutate, we don't know what can jump, but it could.
The next I see is Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got mixed emotions whether I'm going to participate in this hearing any further. It's bordering on the ridiculous. If we follow the logic we just heard, then everybody ought to rush out and kill their family cat and their dog. Let me say that again. If we follow the logic that we just heard, everybody should rush out, find that family cat, take them to the vet, have them humanely put down. Same with your family dog or any other mammalian pet that you have. In your household, should be over there in your neighbor's backyard, probably get them to euthanize any pets they have. I'll just call on Chair Sundin. In fact, I am. I'm going to excuse myself from this hearing after I say what I'm going to say. You need to bring some sanity back to the Committee on Agriculture here, and please don't continue to turn this hearing into a circus. With that, I'm going to excuse myself because I'm not going to participate in the level of absurdity that's going on here right now. So thank you. And Chair Sundin, for goodness sakes, get control of your committee.
Chair Sundin, would you like to respond?
No, just in my closing comments.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just chime in with what Representative Lewick just said. As far as the circus goes, I'm sure that Chair Hansen would agree then that given the risk to humans and the human population in zoos, workers at zoos, visitors at zoos, I hope he's feeling the same concern when it comes to zoo animals, since there's been a number of zoos finding positive animals in their setting. Nothing further, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I have to agree with my seatmates that this seems to be another singling out of the acerbidae deer herd in Minnesota. And a little disappointed when we single out one type of animal in one type of setting. Representative Hansen mentioned the proximity issue. Well, we've heard for years that there is proximity between tame deer and wild deer. They may touch noses across fences, for example. So to single out one area where we are going to be testing and putting down deer is a little bit ludicrous, I think, when deer have proximity with each other. And again, to single out one aspect of agriculture, in my estimation, it's just not fair, Madam Chair.
Okay, seeing no Representative Cleavorn.
Madam Chair, I'm just going to keep my comments really short. I just want to say that whenever we're talking about any kind of pathogen, we always want to have a serious conversation. And I respect that there are opposing views on this topic, but I take offense to the fact that this is being called a circus. We can be adults and we can disagree, but you know, to call out Chair Sundin as not having control over his committee, that's just inappropriate and it's not accurate. But we all have our own election certificates and we're allowed to have our own opinions about every topic that comes forward. But to call the chair names or to call committee members names or to denigrate the work that we're doing at the Capitol is absolutely inappropriate and beneath the office that we hold. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. Seeing no further discussion, I know that we have two amendments filed for this bill. So Representative Burkle, would you like to move your amendment for House File 3421, the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a discussion with Chair Sundin earlier today, and I'm going to withdraw both the A1 and A3 amendments.
All right. Representative Burkle withdraws both his amendments, the A1 and the A3 amendment. Seeing no further amendments, the bill is before us. Any further questions for the author or further discussion? Okay. Chair Sundin, any closing comments?
Thank you, Chair Vang. You know, we just heard a lot of discussion about what we don't know. I think a $250,000 investment in trying to find out some of these answers, some of the correlation between domesticated animals and in humans and white-tailed deer, you know, that's a modest investment, you know. And there's just a growing volume of questions regarding what we don't know about COVID. So I guess I'd like to thank Chairman DePee for and concerned citizens for bringing this about, you know, hopefully to protect the whitetail herd and domesticated animals and livestock as well. So thank you for bringing this important issue to us, our committee. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jeremy. With that, that is it for the discussion. House File 3421 is laid over. And Chair Sundin, I'll return the gavel to you.
Okay, thank you. Up next, we heard the report from Mr. McDivitt. So we'll be moving on to getting back on track with Representative Miller. House File 3713.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I move that House File 3713 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay, there's no one signed up to testify, but Mr. McDivitt is still available. Explain your bill, and hope you're open to questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did have a conversation with the Department of Ag. They are available should there be some technical questions. I'm in talking with other members about this bill. I think a couple of questions will arise that I believe I can answer, but well, they're here as a safety line just in case. So, Mr. Chair, members, I do appreciate you hearing this bill. This bill literally came out of a constituent question on this issue that I investigated. And I think to really understand the intent of this bill and to keep it brief, it is important for me just to spend a minute on the context of the beginning farmer tax credit. The first time I heard this bill was in 15 or 16 when I was first elected. I think it was coming out about that time. There may have been some talk before that. But we have an issue, as the members of this committee know, in that agriculture is aging, particularly when it comes to individual farm owners. And I'm very much in an ag district, so I talked to a lot of people about it. And perhaps the biggest challenge, probably two challenges, but the biggest challenge is access to land that you can farm, and then also building up your assets, finances, things like that. But this was really intended to address primarily that land issue or other assets that may be hard assets that may be related to farming, to get beginning farmers involved. And the presentation was great before this. So, Mr. Chair, I really appreciate you having Mr. McDevitt do that, because it understands that there's an actual definition of beginning farmer and there's qualifications to fit within that. We didn't get the bill passed in the first couple of years because of a lot of questions of the impact on this unintended consequences. And I think when it was finally signed into law, we came up with the best lane, the best fit to address this, to incentivize young farmers, beginning farmers, to get involved in agriculture and having a pathway to which the people that have that land or those other assets, they can participate in that. And I think the program so far has been going pretty good. But what rose out of this, I do appreciate Representative Anderson's questions about expanding this. That's kind of the challenge with this. Who's included and how far can we go with this? Well, when I had a constituent question about LLCs, one of the things I understand, members, is that even these beginning farmers, for tax purposes, for protection of their own personal assets, they will drop these into an LLC. So a lot of farms that are out there, LLCs, even beginning farmers, are. And in talking with the department on this subject, we believe that the language that I have here, which is pretty narrow, it's meant to be intended for individuals who are an LLC to participate in this program. When I asked them about our problem, they came back and suggested this language, and I thought that that was appropriate. So, members, this is really intended to be a pretty narrow slice to improve on the beginning farmer tax credit. I welcome there's going to be some questions about some other ways that these farms are formed. I think we can answer that. But I think this is really does fit within the original intention of the legislature to find ways for beginning farmers to get their foot in the door to be able to begin their farming careers. So with that, all this bill does is just included LLCs, individually owned LLCs, to be included in the beginning farmer tax credit. Mr. Chair, with that, I welcome questions, or if the department wants to add to that, it's up to them. I don't expect them to, but if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Are there any questions to the author? Okay, hearing none, seeing none. Any closing
comments? Mr. Chair, there are some.
Oh, it's not showing up on my screen. I'm sorry. Who's got their hand up first?
Vice Chair Vang. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Vice Chair Vang, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Miller, I'm not sure if you know this question. Perhaps Mr. McDevitt can answer too. How many more do you anticipate will be eligible for your bill?
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Vang, that's a great question. I did have research or a fiscal office do a fiscal analysis of this. It was sent to the committee. I didn't see it posted on the page. I can certainly get it to you. I don't know if it was supposed to be posted or not. So that's nothing to Nancy at all. I didn't see it there. So I do have a Department of Revenue, and It is a fiscal impact in fiscal year 2023 of $600,000, and then in 2024, $700,000, and then zero in 2025. And I thought I knew the reason for that, but I asked, and Cynthia Templin did say that's because this current tax credit has a sunset, so it isn't realized in 2025. So over the next 2 years, basically $600,000 and $700,000 respectively.
Chair Vang, anything further?
Just to clarify my question, Ms. Representative Miller, I meant to how many more people do you think will qualify?
Okay. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Vice Chair Vang. I don't have the number, but based on those dollar amounts, it's going to be, it's not going to increase it greatly. It's going to increase it by, I would say, a handful. How many, I can't honestly tell you that.
Chair Vang, anything further?
That is all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Miller, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. We've talked about this. I think it's one way that we can increase the usage in the program. I do have kind of a technical question, though, and we've talked about this. I understand your intent. On page one of the bill, line 10, you define beginning farmer as on an individual, a limited liability company. But then on page two, beginning with line 27, you again have new language which says a family farm limited liability company. And to me, that kind of opens it back up again, possibly of a father and son being a family LLC. And I pose a question, if the father is 60 years old, and he and the son are together, how are you going to handle something like that?
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, that's a great question. I'm going to rely on the department, not put them on the spot, but when we went to them with this problem, between them and House Research, this is the language that we came up with. So I do believe that it's going to keep it narrow. But your question is raised and is valid. And so I would welcome the department's opinion. And depending on their answer, this does go to taxes. And if we need to clean that up and tighten it up a little bit, I can certainly do it then. I want to make sure that we get this right to the intent. So I would actually throw out that lifeline. Does the department have an opinion on this?
Anyone from the department care to weigh in on this? Crickets. There we go. Commissioner Vauble, please.
Hi, Mr. Chair, Representative Miller. I was hoping Mr. McDevitt was still on, but it doesn't appear to be. I'll have to go back and double check. I don't know, maybe if Colby knows as well, but I will double check on that, but I think that was just a that's how they drafted it up. So I can double check on that and get back to you.
Okay, Representative Anderson, anything further?
Well, thanks again, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think it's worth checking on that. It seems to be a bit of a contradiction, but I like the idea of the bill, Representative Miller, and I trust that you'll look into it and get it straightened out to by your next committee stops. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions from the committee to the testifier or the author? Okay, hearing none, seeing none. Representative Miller, any closing comments before you renew your motion and we vote?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. My only comment is, as Representative Anderson, I will look into that with the Department of Agriculture, but also Department of Revenue, just to make sure we get that right. We'll get it tightened up and make sure that when we get into tax committee, that will be, you heard my intent, so I certainly don't want it to fall outside. That's the problem, by the way, Mr. Chair, with this beginning farmer tax credit is there seems to be leaky sides to this a lot, so we certainly don't want that to happen. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I renew my motion that HF 3713 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes, and I ask for everyone's support.
Okay, you heard the motion. Mr. Smith, please take the roll.
Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin votes aye. Vice Chair Vang.
Aye.
Vang votes aye. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Anderson votes aye. Representative Burkle.
Burkle votes aye.
Burkle votes aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R, aye.
Hansen R votes aye. Representative Hansen J.
Aye.
Hansen J votes aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn votes aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Lewick? Excuse. Representative Miller?
There we go. Miller, aye.
Miller votes aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson votes aye. Representative Thompson?
Thompson, aye.
Thompson votes aye. 12 ayes, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Okay, there being 12 ayes and 0 nays, motion prevails, and House File 3713 is on to its next stop in taxes. Chair Hansen, you have the next bill up, 3273, regarding whitetail deer new registration prohibited. Please move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would move House File 3273 be recommended. Is that to go to the House Environment Committee?
Okay. Thank you. You have testifiers. You care to explain and introduce your testifiers.
So, members, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you look at House File 3273, it is a fairly short bill. It says no additional registrations for farmed white-tailed deer shall be issued, and the effective date is the day following enactment. The reason for this bill is partially the issue that we just heard, but also the ongoing continual chronic crisis with CWD. And so there have been some discussions about buyouts and other ways of dealing with this, but the first step would be to stop the bleeding, and that means we wouldn't have the Board of Animal Health issue any additional registrations. There is precedent for this 20 years ago with turtle registrations for turtle hunting, commercial turtle harvesting. They limited new registrations. So no new registrations. We had testimony in committees last fall that there had been about 6 to 10 new registrations per year. It does fluctuate, so this would stop additional registrations. And I'd ask for your support, and I have Craig Engwall from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association here to testify.
Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Craig Engwall. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, and I'm here to testify on behalf of Representative Hansen's bill, HF 3273. MDHA is a statewide organization that was founded in 1980, comprised of 60 chapters and nearly 20,000 members. We work hard to support deer and deer hunting in Minnesota. We work for habitat, and we work on policy matters. As we do every year, a week ago Saturday, we gathered at our annual meeting in Grand Rapids, and we looked at a number of policy initiatives. And for the fourth year in a row, CWD was a strong focus. And as a part of our package of measures, we virtually unanimously supported a moratorium on new registrations as a necessary means of protecting the wild deer herd. We have such a tremendous heritage and tradition of hunting in Minnesota. It goes throughout the state, even though our state is so different. It's the one thing that's in the fabric of every community. It also has such a tremendous economic impact in Minnesota, with approximately $500 million of economic activity in Minnesota. And that goes from gun purchases, ammo purchases, but to small town restaurants, gas stations, et cetera. So how did MDHA get to its position where we are? Well, CWD has been around in Minnesota since it was discovered in 2002. It's been a part of the wild deer herd since 2010, and there's been a much greater focus since 2016, since it was found to be more widespread in the Southeast. But in 2018, the legislative auditor did an extensive investigation report on the cervid industry and came forward with a number of findings and recommendations. And there were some key findings in there that really showed the threat to the overall, both the captive herd and the wild herd. But one which particularly was bothersome was that approximately one third of cervids farms even failed to have their animals tested for CWD when they were deceased as required by law. So we jump forward to today, 2022. On February 1st, the DNR and the Board of Animal Health issued their joint report. That was part of the change last session in providing for concurrent jurisdiction. And in that report, the board and the DNR found that there was about a 34% infraction rate on their inspected farms. And that's approximately the same numbers as the legislative auditor was finding. And these weren't insignificant. These involved inadequate fencing, inadequate gates, a refusal to allow inspection, and some other things. So we just believe we reached the point where the wild deer herd is at significant threat. There are measures we can take to protect it and mitigate that threat. We've spent nearly $20 million on surveillance of CWD since it started in 2002, and we've got to act now. Nothing has changed in the last number of years, and so we strongly support a moratorium on registrations as part of the package to deal with the CWD threat to the wild herd in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Engwall. Next up, we have Mr. Tim Spreck.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Once again, Tim Spreck with the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. Mr. Chair, just like any other livestock operation, new blood coming into the industry is kind of like the lifeblood of the industry. It gives opportunity for existing farmers to do business and to continue on with their craft. So in the deer farming industry, we've got all kinds of commerce happening between farms. We've got, and specifically with new farms, we've got breeding stock being sold. We've got does and fawns being sold. We're populating new farms, doing commerce. And it's not just commerce between farmers. It's commerce in the local community. They're buying equipment. They're buying property. They're buying all kinds of things right down to the vehicle they purchase at the local dealership. They're selling semen for breeding purposes. They're just an entire economy that's built around these deer farming industries. So, this would do irreparable damage to the industry and would frankly hurt the local economy as well. But Mr. Chair, what I want to do now is kind of transition to another discussion. We're all familiar with the term death by a thousand cuts, and that's exactly what this is. What we're doing is we're trying to drive the deer farming industry into oblivion, just one cut at a time. And, you know, we've gotten to the point now where we are openly willing to discuss an industry-wide buyout. There's precedents in history with going back to things like commercial fishing, et cetera, et cetera. I'd like to make sure that that's on the table and on record. We don't want to be bought out. We don't want to go away, but it's becoming so difficult, so challenging, and so onerous and encumbering to try and continue in this industry that we want to have honest, factual and intellectual discussions about a buyout. Mr. Chair, that would conclude my comments on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spreck. We can open this up for questions from the committee to the author or the testifiers. I see Representative Miller is up first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'll be brief. I've been pretty clear in this committee since these types of bills have been coming in from a couple of years ago. I don't support it. I think that these are these are the sorts of things the state just shouldn't be tinkering on. This is very serious stuff. This is very serious liabilities, and I don't want to disregard the seriousness of chronic wasting disease. Or, Chair Hansen has been very clear on this, as have some others. I think we disagree on some points, but the gravity of some of these bills that are coming forward to affect this is not only concerning for me when it comes to the deer farmers, but what happens next with the next disease, with the next animal. I just think the approach that we're taking on these deer herds is just inconsistent with the way that we look at agriculture in the state of Minnesota. I think it's inconsistent with how you deal with the problem with chronic wasting disease. As I said in the last bill, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. We talk about what we're going to do with farmed herds, but then we seem to just not pay attention to these wild herds. And I certainly don't want to harm, I want to be clear, I don't want to harm the wild herds either. But if I just like to see a different approach. If we want to deal with farm herds of deer, there's better ways that we can do it than having a bill like this. So I don't support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Just a reminder to an announcement to the committee. There are the amendments that were removed from the agenda today, Representative Burkle's amendments. I think he's looking at more of a solution than continued discussion on this. Up next, Chair Eklund, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this isn't a question, Mr. Spreck, but a comment, because I was going to ask him if the Deer Farming Association was interested in a buyout, and it's for the first time that we've had any conversation. Mr. Chair, members, that's the first time that we've ever heard these words uttered by this group, so that interesting turn of events. And then Mr. Spreck almost commented about the commerce, and I understand the commerce as far as selling animals, moving animals, using the semen for breeding purposes, et cetera. But what I find most interesting about the defense of this is talking to the folks at the Wildlife Research Institute, not one of these farms in Minnesota is certified to use their raw products at Wildlife Research. They buy strictly from certified farms. And I think that's what we've been trying to get after all these years that we've been working on this, Mr. Chair, is let's clean up this industry. I, for one, have never said I want it to end. I know there's a value to it, but we got to start doing things right. Representative Anderson mentioned earlier the nose-to-nose contact. Well, we tried to fix that with redundant fences or double fencing, but that didn't work. That was too much of a cost. All I've been trying to do in all these bills that I've been working on in CWD is protect the wild deer herd, which is so important to northern Minnesota and their tourism economy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund, I appreciate your words. There seems to be at least a hint of compromise, and I think that's what's going to have to happen here if we're going to reach some kind of agreement that keeps the farms, keep them operating well. We don't want them to make mistakes either, and yet protects the wild deer herd at the same time. So thank you for that. And yeah, we've heard a lot of talk this session, or at least some talk about a buyout program. And I think if my memory serves correctly, when this bill came up a couple of years ago, I think buyout was part of it. And now today we see this bill and there's no mention of a buyout, just really effectively putting the deer farmers out of business. Mr. Spreck was correct that if I couldn't sell my deer farm to next generation or whomever, it effectively makes it, in a sense, worthless because you can't pass it on. You can't sell it as an ongoing operation. So it really is it's a difficult solution to the problem here. And I would just respectfully ask Representative Hansen one question, if he would be willing to listen or if he would be in favor of some kind of a deer buyout program for the farm survey herd. Representative Hansen.
Comments, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson, not at this time. And the reason for that is I think it'll turn into an auction with public money. And if there's an unwillingness to even stop the bleeding by saying no more registrations, then why should the public pay to clean up this mess? We're already having to pay for in the wild herd. Now, I will give you a caveat. I think there needs to be a comprehensive package. The House has passed comprehensive packages for several years and run into zero from the Senate. Zero. There are many things that could be done. And if many things can be done, then possibly a buyout could be part of that. But starting the bidding right now and going through the rest of the session about how much we're going to pay for domestic deer, we'll stop all of that other discussion. What happens with a buyout? Do to be secure? Is the site secured? Are wild deer excluded? Will someone buy the site and put other deer on it or other cervids? What's the containment? Does the contamination get listed on the deed or disclosure? There's a lot of issues that would need to get worked out. So we're not there at this time, and there are other things that need to get done. The other question is, in a voluntary buyout, which I think is what you're saying, what happens to the people who do not want to be bought out and hold out for more money? And it's always the public money. This bill, to bring it back to this bill, is a simple step to say, stop the bleeding. We're doing disease containment. No additional entrance into this risky business. It's a very risky business, not only in terms of economics, but to the people getting into it. Now, with the potential for COVID mutating in the captive deer herd. It's a risky business, so why get into it? So a moratorium has to be part of that. That's a long answer, Representative Anderson. I think you might find some hope in there.
Okay, Representative Anderson, please.
Well, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. Yeah, the feelings, you know, run deep on this issue, and I certainly respect that. I do think that if we're going to make some changes, they need to be delicate changes, clean up the mistakes, for one thing, obviously, and work on things like that. But I think this bill, 3273, is kind of like taking a sledgehammer to the deer herds in that it effectively gives them, it ruins their net worth. They can't sell it. So, yeah, a lot of things to look at here moving forward. But I just can't support this because I think it just is too severe, too strict on the deer farmers, at least the way I see it today. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions, comments? Chair Hansen, you get the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, this is a small step on containment, not having the opportunity to spread either chronic wasting disease or COVID. I'm asking for your vote and your support to begin moving on the simple step of not allowing any additional white-tailed deer farm registrations.
Okay, I understand the motion ought to be that Hansen moves House File 3273 to be referred to the Environment Committee, and we'll need a roll call on this.
Mr. Chair, could I ask one quick question, please?
Certainly, and Chair Hansen will have the opportunity to respond.
Yeah, it's to Representative Hansen. You just mentioned, Representative, what this bill would stop any additional registrations. Does that mean a current deer farm could sell to another operation? What do you mean by no additional registrations?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you look on, Representative Anderson, I don't know if you have the bill up online, 1.13, the board must not approve a new registration under this subdivision for farmed white-tailed deer.
I see that, Mr. Chair. But again, in the example, if I sold to my son, would that be a new registration?
Chair Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I use the model of the turtle, commercial turtle license, which allowed for moving within the family. I would be open to clarifying that. So it's within the family. It could stay as a new, because I would view that as a continuing.
Not Representative Anderson?
Okay, yeah, that clarifies that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Another final word, Chair Hansen?
And we can make that technical amendment in the next committee, if you're willing, Representative Anderson.
Okay. Again, the motion would be to move 3273 to the Environment Committee. Mr. Smith, take the roll.
Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin votes aye. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Vang votes aye. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Anderson, no. Representative Burkle.
Burkle votes no.
Burkle votes no. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R, aye.
Hansen R, aye. Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J, aye.
Hansen J, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Representative Lewick, excused. Representative Miller.
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Thompson.
Thompson votes aye.
Thompson votes aye. 8 ayes, 4 nays, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with 8 ayes and 4 nays, motion prevails, and the bill's off to the Environment Committee. Okay, that wraps up our business for today. But I'm glad we're at this table. It's going to be a tough issue to chew on for quite a while. But I'm looking forward to hearing Representative Burkle's input with a bill that he will be offering, and we'll get to us sooner rather than later. So, seeing no other business, this meeting's adjourned.